kielbasa as medicine. If an infant fell ill, it would be given the kielbasa to suck. Did that help? I asked skeptically. Of course, he replied with conviction, and fell into gloomy silence again. To my right sat Skinny W, with his emaciated, pockmarked face. He moaned with pain whenever the weather changed. He said he had taken a bullet in the knee during a forest battle. But who was fighting against whom, and exactly who shot him, this he would not say. There were also several students from better families among us. They were neatly attired, had nicer clothes, and the girls wore high heels. Yet they were striking exceptions, rare occurrences. The poor, uncouth countryside predominated. Wrinkled coats from army surplus, patched sweaters, percale dresses. The professor showed us photographs of antique sculptures and of Greek figures painted on brown vases. Beautiful, statuesque bodies, noble, elongated faces with fine features. They belonged to some unknown mythic universe, a world of sun and silver, warm and full of light, populated by slender heroes and dancing nymphs. We didn't know what to make of it. Looking at the photographs, Z was morosely silent, and W contorted himself to massage his aching knee. Others looked on, attentive yet indifferent, before those future prophets proclaiming the clash of civilizations. The collision was taking place long ago, twice a week, in the lecture hall where I learned there once lived a Greek named Herodotus. I knew nothing as yet of his life, or about the fact that he left us a famous book. We would in any event have been unable to read the histories, because at that moment its Polish translation was locked away in a closet. In the mid-1940s, the histories had been translated by Professor Severin Hammer, who deposited his manuscript in the Zetelnik Publishing House. I was unable to ascertain the details because all the documentation disappeared. But it happens that Hammer's text was sent by the publisher to the typesetter in the fall of 1951. Barring any complications, the book should have appeared in 1952, in time to find its way into our hands while we were still studying ancient history. But that's not what happened, because the printing was suddenly halted. Who gave the order? Probably the censor, but it's impossible to know for certain. Suffice it to say that the book finally did not go to press until 3 years later, at the end of 1954, arriving in the bookstores in 1955. One can speculate about the delay in the publication of the histories. It coincides with the period preceding the death of Stalin and the time immediately following it. The Herodotus manuscripts arrived at the press just as Western radio stations began speaking of Stalin's serious illness. The details were murky, but people were afraid of a new wave of terror and preferred to lie low, to risk nothing, to give no one any pretext to wait things out. The atmosphere was tense. The censors redoubled their vigilance. But Herodotus? A book written 2,500 years ago? Well, yes, because all our thinking, our looking and reading, was governed during those years by an obsession with allusion. Each word brought another one to mind. Each had a double meaning, a false bottom, a hidden significance. Each contained something secretly encoded, cunningly concealed. Nothing was ever plain, literal, unambiguous. From behind every gesture and word peered some referential sign, gazed a meaningfully winking eye. The man who wrote had difficulty communicating with the man who read, not only because the censor could confiscate the text en route, but also because when the text finally reached him, the latter read something utterly different from what was clearly written, constantly asking himself, what did this author really want to tell me? And so a person consumed, obsessively tormented by illusion, reaches for Herodotus. How many illusions he will find there! The histories consist of 9 books, and each one is illusions heaped upon illusions. Let us say he opens